Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, what's up? This is The Diary. This is your host, Stacy, and it is a beautiful, beautiful Sunday here in Sacramento, October the 10th, and I love the end of the year because being born in December, I just get all warm and fuzzy. I get to cook for people. I get to have fun. I get to light up lights and show Elijah just how wonderful Christmas is. So, yeah, thanks for being with me if you are live or listening now. And most of you guys listen after the fact, which is cool, and that's the beauty of the Internet, and it's the beauty of what we do. So I'm available all the time. Wonderful words of wisdom for you all the time. So today what we're going to talk about, we're going to finish up Africans in America, because the one person that don't want to talk about Africa are black people. They don't want to hear about it. I love talking about it. But for some reason, we don't have a big interest in knowing it, and it's a shame. And it's no wonder we're in the condition that we are. But you know what? I consider myself trying to be out there to be an example and a leader, so I'm going to teach even people my age. And you know, I had a couple conversations about black history, and I'm just going to go over that real quick. Yes, we're going to finish Africans in America, and then we're going to also talk about the perennial philosophy, which is the concepts and themes that most religions are based on, especially the Christian religion. And this is what you should be thinking about when you think about having a relationship with your higher power. So we're going to go over that. Being that we started this love movement, hopefully my love folks are supposed to be calling me. And I want to thank Cheryl today for this week. You know, she came through for me in a way that I never, you know. Well, she's my family. I mean, I wasn't surprised when she did what she did, but, you know, she didn't have to, so I really thank her, and she's really proven, you know, because all of this stuff really starts at home. If you can't help home, you got issues, you know, so I want to thank her, and she knows what she did to help out old Aunt Stacy, so it was all good. And then I want to thank Jessica, because Jessica always, you know, is so positive and, you know, such a go-getter, and everybody that talks about her, once they meet her, they're like, you know, Jessica is just something else. And I'm like, I know. So I just thank Jessie for being Jessie and knowing in her heart that it is something better at her young age. And if she can get a hold of it now, you know, and she's popular. So she'll show them knuckleheads out there in the world what's real. So I thank Jessie just for being Jessie. Always on mama's side, no matter what, all her whole life, always. So anyway, and let's see, Terry, thank you for being positive and coming up with the name Love Movement. And the I should be probably finished by now. Her daughter Imani had a little meet today about 11 o'clock. So hopefully she's done and everything was fantastical and the I did just what she was supposed to do, which is wonderful. And then there's me, and then there's Elijah, and he's always wonderful. And I think, is that everybody? Everybody's good. Jesse, me, Cheryl, you know, and anybody willing to join the love movement, all you got to do is love unconditionally without a bunch of bullshit strings attached. You're in, Buzz. All right, so let me talk about a couple of things before I get started on everything. Black history. Tutoring a little girl today, and she's half black, half Hispanic. But, you know, once you black, you pretty much black. I don't care what you mix with. That black stands out, especially in America. So you could be black in anything, you're black. So we were talking about, I said, hey, I think I'm going to talk to your dad about maybe signing you up if you're interested for Black History Club. We need to know, you know, it would just make everybody better. And I said, you know what Black History is? And she said, nope. And I said, oh. And then other side of it, she really didn't know much about her Hispanic history either, so it wasn't like she was, you know. But they all need to know. Our kids need to know. We're doing them an injustice when we don't teach them where we come from. And unfortunately, when you talk black history, really, there's, like, really only one bad guy. I mean, there's, like, truly only one bad guy. So, okay, get over it, face it, so we can go on, because Every 40, 50, 60 years in our history, racism tends to tear this country apart. I mean, it did when the 4th of July Revolution, Civil War stuff, and then we went to the Civil Rights Movement, you know, we had to make a law because we were tending to tear this country apart. Let's just make a law for the Negroes, not that we're going to hold to it. And now here we are, you know, 45 or so years after that, we got the Tea Party, you know, that's really just showing just racist tendencies. I don't care what you say. But, you know, here we go again, and, you know, there's nobody standing up for black people. And we have enough black leaders. I'm tired of talking about it. So that's why we started the Love Movement. That's why we do what we do, because, you know, we have to do better for ourselves, and I don't know why our country doesn't realize when black people suffer, all people suffer. You know, the first thing, you know, when freedom was sought, you know, for the abolition of slavery, you know, we black people all knew that this country was built off of our backs, black people's backs. Yeah, we added some people other in the mix, but the greatness of America was built off of the backs of black people. And, I mean, we can hide it, we can disguise it, we can say, okay, we made a law, so now everything's cool. But it's not, and it'll never be until we deal with this shit on a real level. And if adults can't do it, let's teach kids to do it. Because just like they don't care if their friends are gay, they don't care if their friends are black. Unfortunately, they old racist-ass grandmas and grandpas do. But the kids don't. So let's start with the kids because, you know, maybe we'll have a chance to keep this country together for the next however many hundreds of years. Okay, people? Get your shit together. So, okay, that was that black history story. And then I talked to her dad and I said, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, I took a class in college, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, what do you study? I said, well, we really base everything off of the PBS special, Africans in America. We do projects. And then I have a list of African kings and queens, and we just go through that and do play. And I see, he said, yeah, I watch that, Africans in America. He said, that just made me mad. That just made me so mad. And it's like, okay, I understand. It made me mad, too. You know, but he was saying that his teacher was telling him he wanted him to be mad. He didn't want him to be able to look at this shit and be like, okay, bye-bye, see you tomorrow. You know, he wanted it to get a rise out of him. And if you know, like I said, we do an injustice to ourselves when we don't study our history, black people. Because if we study our history, we would look at any racist and say, what is your problem? Why do you have a problem with me? You know? And we would pull up our pants and open up more books. And those people suffer for us to do this and be who we are today. Those people are people, you know. So, yeah, they don't want us to learn black history. They don't want us to concentrate on our history. And we're doing them such a great favor by not. You know, and just like a couple years ago, somebody Asian wrote an article saying, yeah, slavery exists because black people were weak. Well, if that stupid bastard would have studied black history, he would have seen we were no kinds of weak, and that's the only reason why slavery ended, because we decided we were going to be just as violent as them motherfuckers. So, here we go. Now, pitiful, sad story. One more thing before we get started. Pitiful, sad story on the No Child Left Behind shit. And my friend Oliver said, yeah, every child left behind. I'm like, exactly. So, all before, now mind you, the same shit happened to me last year with the same person. But, yeah, we can do this, we'll do that. I said, well, weren't you the one from last year? Oh, yeah, it's going to be totally different this year. We can pay you to outreach. We can pay you rent. We can pay you to do this, and we'll pay you to do that, and pay you. I'm like, good, because finally the nonprofit's going to get some money to do some shit. So it comes down to the time. It turns out to, no, we didn't say that. No, we can't do that. And as a matter of fact, you got to go to solicit the kids. And you got about 10 days to do it. The kids have 10 days to put in applications for this program to get the free shit. And if they don't turn it in within 10 days, they don't get it. And I'm like, okay, wait, call me dumb, but those schools know, and these underperforming schools know who they are. They also know the underperforming kids. So why can't you make the connection, school or program that I'm associated with? Why can't you just say, hey, here are the tutors in your area. Give them a call if you want them. But no, we as a nonprofit have to go to wherever kids may be and hand out their flyers, of which you got to make them yourself. You got to pay your own people to go out there and do it. A hundred and a whole circle. What is that, 360, right? I'm a math person. A whole 360 from what we talked about. But is the same shit happened last year. So I said, well, look, and me and my group talked about it last night. I'm like, look, guys, I'm not going to send you all over town. They know the kids that are failing. Why do I have to send you to where they may live and put a flyer on the door? That shit just don't make sense to me. They have a pot of money from the fucking federal government to get these dumbass kids smart. But yet you want me to go run out there and put on flyers on doors for free. Where's the money? And I'm looking at your flyer. You tell me this is what you'll give me if I do it. And now all of a sudden, 2, 3, 4 weeks later, the script is totally flipped. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do your work while you get the federal money and I do the work for free. Yeah, granted, we get paid for the tutoring, but you guys know who the damn kids are. It's not like, they go to these fucked up schools you gave me 3 of. Which one's getting an F in math? Have them call me. I'm not doing it. That's stupid shit. I'm like, what kind of system is that? I'm like, I don't know what. To me, that don't fucking make sense to me. And everybody that I spoke to, okay, said, yeah, that don't make sense. If they know the kids, why you got to go out and advertise and hope they call you? But make sure when they call you, you put this organization's name on the list. No, I'm going to put my fucking name on the list if I'm going out there with the expense of finding the fucking kid. When you know the kids from the classroom, the math teacher know who's failing. And and we can't contact the school. I'm like, I don't know what kind of racket y'all playing, but you know what? It's not to the benefit of the kids. So basically, you guys can kiss where my sun rarely shines. Although it is very brown and beautiful, the sun don't shine there. And it looks like my show page went down because I'm really talking. So I'm going to just pop it up again. But, you know, that's the crazy stuff. They want me to say, okay. I mean, to me, that just doesn't make practical sense. That's like a big circle you want me in, some hoops you want me to jump into, and for absolutely no reason. You know the dumb kids, okay? You know who they are. So why do I have to find them for you? I'm not with that. I'm not. I couldn't be. So, you know, no. Tomorrow's going to be a very uncomfortable conversation I'm going to have with someone about this. But this is a diary. This is where we don't bullshit when it comes to stuff. This should be a slam dunk. Dumb kid, me right here, we got free transportation. End of story. Why do I have to go to all these ghetto apartment complexes? And you know they ain't going to answer the door. And even if I put the flyer on the goddamn door, Shaquita is not going to call me. You know where the dumbass kids are. Bring them to me. Peace. I'll be back, babies. African, low African, I guess. This is a diary where we love you and we hate bullshit. So, you know, as long as I'm alive, don't ask me to accept bullshit. You know, I've been a single mom of three kids. That's why when I come home and make dinner, it don't take but 30 minutes because I ain't got time for a whole bunch of bullshit. Kids, no, mom's home, dinner be done in 30 minutes, and it be a banging-ass dinner, okay? So I handle my business. I don't have time for bullshit. My time's limited. You know, and how dumb does that sound? We're in the era of either do it this way, even though it sounds dumb, or you won't get paid. And you know what? That's why I like the perennial philosophy because, yeah, me and God are one. Okay, I can do what God can do on a mini level as long as I concentrate, right? Call those things that be not as though they are, right? That's what the perennial philosophy says, that you can just think into existence those things that you want. We're not human beings trying to live perfectly on this fucking earth for some pastor or some fake fool that want to take your money and buy yourself a Bentley and then boink your little boy when you ain't watching. No, we're spiritual beings lucky enough to be placed on this earth in this physical body that we can have wonderful experiences. And that's what religion was always meant to be. These pimps and prostitutes and hoes and crooks and all these, especially in the South, my God. I mean, the history of the black church was, it began by a black man and a white man. Okay, yeah, missionaries, but not Africans. And they only did it so they can help themselves maybe when the yellow plague came. Okay, the missionary said, okay, the only people that don't seem to be getting sick are the black people. So maybe we can win them over, win all the other white people over. Why you got to win us over? We property treated like shit. You got to win me over? I mean, Christian nation, you know, black history pisses me off because it's so full of shit. That's why they don't want you to know. Because if you really knew like homeboy, I'm just mad. Well, you can't live your life just mad because you do dumb shit when you stay mad. But you can teach kids and you can, I mean, there ain't but one villain in black history, okay? And it's the same villain today. And then we come up with new and fantastic ways to distract us and to fuck us up even more. And thanks to the non-existent black leadership, we all fucked up. Case in point, you know, I'm nobody. I got a Twitter account, but I follow certain people on Twitter, black people, to see if they're doing anything. And big ups to Cory Booker, okay, who took his town from a murder every 10 minutes to, like, none for a whole year. And he walks the street and talks to his folks, ask them what they need, give them advice, blah, 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 blah. I also follow Roland Martin. Well, what did he dumb say? He's on CNN. You know, how many black men are on CNN, okay? My thing is if they put you in a position of power, black person, you're supposed to do more than just the average. Don't be so giggly and happy that maybe now you're in a clique or something that you weren't in before just because we got a black president, because that's the first time I saw his ass on CNN as soon as Obama won. Anyway, my point is, reading the Twitter tweets, okay, blah, 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 oh, I'm bumping this on the iPod, and I tweeted back, you know, we need our black men to be big boys, okay? It's not like you're the high school president, and that might have been a little harsh, you know? And then he tweeted back, well, grown people, I listen to this and that, and grown people can listen, automatically get butthurt like a female. Once again, you're on CNN. And my point to him is, wasn't what you were listening to. I said, look, I'm 45 years old. I've been clown for 30 years. My favorite artist is Barbara Streisand, and I don't give a shit. And anybody can, whatever. Okay, she ain't black, she ain't Jay-Z, and she ain't ghetto. All right, but I love her, always have since I was 15 years old, 10, whatever. Okay, Carpenters, too, they ain't black. They ain't get Jay-Z and they ain't ghetto. All right, so it ain't about what you listen to. It's about where you are. Too much is given, much is fucking required. If you work for MTV, and this is what I told him, if you work for MTV or BET, then tell me what the hell you listening to on your iPod. Okay, but you work for CNN giving political opinions and blah, 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 and you just acting like a little girl because maybe they let you in the clique while this black man is president. And I said, you know, say something positive. Black people need to hear positive shit. We don't need to hear what you're listening on the iPod. Who gives a shit what you're listening to on the iPod? Really? Ooh, I'm going to go get that because he's listening to it. No, you're on CNN to be above the fray, okay? Let's hope. anybody in a position of power that's black should really should be putting themselves in a position to be better than just the average. Okay, who cares about that bullshit? I want to see what you can do or how you can go on CNN for me and talk up something positive for black people. That's what I want to hear. Well, what are you talking about next week on CNN that's going to help black people? Who gives a shit what's on your iPod? Anyway, I got butthurt. He got butthurt. I didn't listen to it. I'm sure he responded again. Oh, and then tweeted something about people stop filing bankruptcy and just try to live above your live within your means. Once again, I had to say something. Look, leaders don't make blanket generalizations, all right? I filed bankruptcy, but a deadbeat motherfucker left me with three kids, and I wasn't about to have everything taken, including my income, because of that. So what, live above what means? Shut your mouth. And if you can't say something positive to black people, don't tweet. And that's where I'm coming from. So send me to that standard if my ass ever end up anywhere but where I am right now. Send me to the standard. You won't see a little silly ass shit coming out of me. I'm trying to do stuff that's going to make black people's lives better, not some silly shit so I can be just like everybody else silly. Anyway, we're going to talk about black people. And my switchboard went off, but I'm going to open up another one just in case I need to take a break, which I'm probably going to have to do very soon in a minute. Switchboard. Da, 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 da. Here we go. So if anybody's calling, I don't know, and you probably can't call because the switchboard is not fully operational. It keeps going out on me in my luxury space. But you know, why we live is to help people. We don't live for ourselves. We live to make life different and better and for other people. You know, that's a lonely-ass existence when you just live it to make yourself better. You know, you're supposed to live it to. I mean, we're spiritual beings here for physical experiences. And, yeah, God wants you to live in abundance because that's the only way you're going to help anybody else. How are you going to help somebody else if you can't even take care of your own shit? Okay, so, and that's in truth, and you don't need no crooked-ass pastor to tell you that or tell you that you need to give him 10% before that'll happen. You can get your 10% anywhere you damn please. Anyway, now, Africans in America, we're going to continue with brotherly love. Okay, so that was the period of time when the church was being established. That was right after the revolution. We had gotten free. The colony was free from British rule, and a lot of that, after that part, you know, it was all about the Constitution, all men are created equal. That's when the black church had established itself, and, you know, black Americans began to question the authority of white Americans because, no, how can you profess your freedom and fight so hard for your freedom, but yet you have us in bondage. And as we know, it's all about the almighty dollar. That's the reason. And somebody told me the other day, money's the root of all evil. I'm like, no, see, that's where people get it confused. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil. Don't get that confused because money serves a very good purpose if you use it in the right way. So it's the love of that shit that makes people kill each other, lie, steal, hoe they wives and call them they wives. Crazy shit. Anyway, and hold slaves. So life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness was for everybody in the colony at that time except for black Americans. So Richard Allen began the Bethel Church. And he was, and that's the first AME church. And once again, the first institution in America was the black church. All right, so blacks began to establish themselves, and the churches began to establish, and the AME church was started through the help of the white church at the time. And, you know, they just started the church because they thought at this period of time yellow fever had taken over, and it appeared in Philadelphia anyway, and it appeared that, you know, blacks were the only ones that weren't succumbing to it. So, when the yellow fever was at its height, government left the town, law enforcement left, everybody left. So they were forced to have blacks be their nurses and help them back to health. So at this time, whites in America, the white church that were predominantly against slavery, saw that, you know, this as divine intervention, that, okay, now black people, look, you don't seem to be succumbing to it, so maybe if you go and nurse your white masters back to health, you know, they'll like you, they'll love you, and, you know, we can begin to show them that you're just like them, and we can talk about abolishing slavery. But as soon as everybody got well, it went back to a big racial divide, and laws were made, and they just kept going. You know, they wasn't thinking about, but all they were thinking about was, I'm glad they didn't kill me while I was asleep when they came in to change my bandage type shit. So, yellow fever. All right, so I just want to give some points, and brotherly love, the years that we're talking about is from 1791 to 1831. So they just pointed out some different things during that time, in particular because of religion, and now they were black Christians, so of course slaves were getting married. And just a couple things, from jumping the broom to throwing a rope from one across the home, and each of the men and women would yank at it from both ends, and the man would yank harder, he'd come on his end, and then the wife would go on his side and join her. But when the white masters or white ministers administer, you know, the vows, they would always take out till death do you part, us part, and the part that stated whatever God has joined, let no man tear asunder. They took that part out. But, you know, slave marriages were not legal or secure. And the creation of the cotton gin just made it worse because, of course, once again, it's kind of rerun. Cotton gin, what 100 people could do with the cotton gin, it only took 2 people. So, you know, cotton was king. That's where that comes from. I mean, we started to produce more cotton. They needed more slave labor. And, you know, basically, black people, the family unit made no difference. And like I said before, when I ended the last time, it was like the male was not considered part of the family. Family was the mother and the children. So, you know, to break up the family, it wasn't a problem. And I think they mentioned one part where it said that, you know, one of the black man was begging, his wife and children had been sold, and he was begging, please, you know, please don't tear my family apart, you know. And he said that the slave owner told him, well, you can get a new wife in Virginia, come on, you know. And it's just like the harshness and the heartlessness of that whole part of our history. You know, it's no wonder nobody wants to study that in detail, because, I mean, it's just a contradiction of what a, quote, Christian life should be about. So, you know, America's a big contradiction, and I think we've caught up with it, and maybe 2008 or so, somebody thought, well, shit, I think we're going down, so let's just rob the bank, George Bush, and he gave it the thumbs up. So I don't know. I don't really know. But all I know is I can do something to make things different, not only for me, but for my people and kids. And all right, so back to the cotton gin. Because of it, slavery expanded in Tennessee, in Alabama, and in Mississippi. Okay, 50 years after the cotton gin's, debut, 75% of all the world's cotton came from the South. So, and that just made for an army of slave labor, you know. And they say that the cotton gin was the most important invention in America up to the Civil War. So it was very important. It made a lot of money for a lot of people. So no family was safe, okay. And laws were passed to put tighter reins on the movement of blacks because of it, you know. Because they didn't, you know, you breaking up families, people were running away more. They were arming themselves. They were doing all kind of stuff. So, and if, you know, slaves were basically their gold. So if the master died, in the case of Thomas Jefferson, if he died and had debts owed to him, well, he would sell off 4, 5, 6, 7 people. He wouldn't care if it was, you know, they wouldn't care to take the whole family or not, you know. Black people were property. They were money, and it, whenever they needed money, they sold off 3 or 4. It didn't make a difference. Or they sold off half a family. They said, let's see. So that was during that time. So we're doing all of this, but yet every man is created equal in the pursuit of happiness. And also there were free states, so not every state in the, you know, there were free states. So the free people would be trying to get down there to the slave states and get them over there and get them taught up and get them saved. And, you know, so it was a lot of stuff. And they mentioned a few guys. One is Gabriel. He was a blacksmith, and he went to jail for stealing a pig. And his sentence was to be beaten. And then he was in jail for 30 days, and then he was branded, too. So in jail, he planned an insurrection. Came out, he organized 1,000 slaves, made all the tools himself because he was a blacksmith. But what happened 2 days before the insurrection? Some Sammy fool, another black slave, two other black slaves, ratted him out. And, of course, what they do? They killed him. So, now, and at the same time, Sandoman, which is now Haiti, okay, that's when those insurrections were taking place, about 1801. And they were colonized by the French, Napoleon and his crew. And that colony, they were moving towards freedom. They had a black leader who had outlawed slavery and just basically beat the French's ass and won their freedom. But during this time, maybe once they have freedom for about 3 years, Napoleon's making side deals with Thomas Jefferson, that, you know, we're going to go back in here in Haiti and try to get slavery back. Will you back us? Oh, yeah, sure, I'll back you. That's what Thomas Jefferson said. Yeah, no problem. Because I guess we were also selling them goods. We were selling them cotton. We were selling them stuff. And Thomas Jefferson actually tried to stop the sale of it, or the export of our goods to them, but somebody in this Congress or whatever said, no, we make too much money regardless. You know, but his whole thing was, we can't let American black slaves in America know that there is some part of the world where blacks are winning their freedom by kicking people's asses. And that was his biggest concern. But they kept selling, and it never worked, of course. The French went back in the second time. Haitian people kicked their asses the second time, and it became Haiti. And it's been free ever since. It's all fucked up, but it's free. And because Napoleon was not able to secure Haiti, which was going to be a fortress against something, or Spain, I guess, in that part of the world. So because he couldn't get it, he didn't need the portions of America. Well, now that is a Louisiana purchase. So he sold that to us, and Louisiana purchased double the size of the U.S. and gave us 13 new states for which we can fight over in terms of slavery, basically. By the 1830s, the Mississippi River was full of shipping boats moving all the slave goods back and forth. Okay, it says full of slave-grown cotton. So, 1808, U.S. stopped importing slaves from Africa. So in 1808, they figured, well, we got enough here in America. We don't need to go to Africa anymore. So they stopped that. And just like, I guess, the stock market is today, back then, because of that, there fueled a idea that there was a shortage of slave labor in America, and then they began to trade slaves between the upper and lower South, okay, and it just became crazy. Slavery flourished in the upper South, and let's see, women with children were sold first, so there was massive trading between the upper and lower South, regardless of family. So that's when, at that time, you're breaking up families more than ever because, you know, people are trying to get their slaves for what they need, and they don't care, and I just need one, even though there's a family of three. So between the abolitionists and the free slaves in the North and the frustrated slaves in the South, everything just started to bubble. And which makes sense. That makes absolute sense. So the black churches in Philadelphia, their whole purpose, and they were free state, was to help. Okay, that's what they did. The black churches helped free and helped the slaves to try to get away. They were a political voice for black America. They were the economic hub for black America. Economically, this is what we'd like to see. Doesn't that sound good? I wish we had that today. And it was a place where black people could express themselves And that's exactly what the black church had turned to be back in those days when, you know, we really needed it to work. Once again, it was there to help black people. It was a political voice for black America. Something like Martin Luther King, right? It was the economic hub of cooperation between blacks. Oh, there was cooperation between blacks. Wow. That was a long time ago. You must have been a slave. Oh, Lord. And it was a place where blacks could express themselves. That's wonderful. You know, that's what black church needs to be today, and that's what the love movement is going to be all about. Inspiration, inclusion, and education. And this is the education part when we get to, even if we got to cut this short, we're going to get to the perennial philosophy because that's important. All right, couple facts, fun facts. 1805 to 1814, bills were passed to stop the immigration of slaves to Philly because Philly was a free state, so a bill was passed. Nope, you can't go in. No more black people can go to Philly. Isn't that something? 1816, black citizens were not allowed to celebrate the 4th of July. Once again, in 1816 in Philly, black citizens were not allowed to celebrate the 4th of July. And in 1817 on New Year's Day, these brilliant leaders of ours established the American Colonization Society. And basically that was a society put together. Thomas Jefferson, a bunch of people were involved, and what they tried to do is basically say, okay, all right, free black people. What we want you to do is we're going to reestablish your ass back in Africa. Ain't that some shit? And this is where I think I'm going to take a break. Yeah, remember that. I bet nobody knows that. The American Colonization Society, okay, they try to do to us what they did to the Indians, but take us back to Africa. So because of this, blacks broke away from that AME church. They broke away from that, and they, oh, no, not yet. The Allen's Bethel Church, still organized with the white people, but this was their response. Basically, our ancestors had no choice, okay, basically, all right? Our ancestors had no choice basically to come over here, okay? And we will never separate ourselves from the prosperity of the land or from our slave brothers and sisters, okay? So take your great idea to send us back to Africa now that there's too many of us and you don't need us no more and the economy is not like it used to be and you think you're going to get rid of us, so go on back to Africa. So, no, we wasn't cool with that idea. So what I'm going to try to do is get my switchboard up again that went kooky. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about the perennial philosophy because that's more important. We know where we came from. The perennial philosophy will take us where we want to go. This is a diary. This is where I love you. And this is free for all. Take a listen. All right, I think we're back, and this is the diary where I love you, and we got the love movement going on. So, you know, I want to go over right now, and we're not going to finish Africans in America, but I'm going to do that maybe about 15 minutes next week. We know how the story ends, so thank God, huh? So, but I wanted to get into the perennial philosophy. And basically the term was coined by this guy named Leibniz, and you have to look on the internet and all of that, but it basically concerns itself with the one and the divine reality substantial to the world, and of things and of lives and of mind. And once you have this reality, you know, you understand yourself, you understand why you're here, you understand the meaning of life, and you accept certain things a little better in your life. And then not necessarily everything was meant for your harm, but most things are for your good. And we have this oneness with our Creator that every religion known to man, especially Christianity, says that we are made in the image and the likeness of our God. But the perennial philosophy began with like this kind of mysticism that the mystics, long before there were organized religions, believed that, you know, we are spiritual beings sent here by our Creator in His image and His likeness. We can communicate with Him, and the things that we ask for, we receive now. And I pretty much think, growing up Catholic, okay, for 12 years of private school, that's pretty much everything that I was ever taught. And every religion is based on these concepts. So, and it's kind of like, it's a mystic kind of idea. So, and I know somebody calls her a mystic, but man, if you are a mystic, you understand that you are one with God and you have no fear of anything. You begin to learn who you are. You begin to try to understand your reason and your purpose for living. And you understand that, yes, everything that I perceive, I can achieve. So, and that's like every religion ever. There's no fear. There's no apprehension. There's only love. There's only oneness. And if you truly understand that you are one with our Creator, then you understand that you possess all of the good things that the Creator has to offer, and you can overflow with those things. You can give them to people. You can, you know, that way, if you concentrate on that idea, you don't have time to be a hater. You don't have time to be a racist. You don't have time to hurt children, because that's not something that our Creator would do. So let's see. Now let me try to get some points out. Says, and it cannot be really directly immediately apprehended by everyone, okay, except by those who have chosen to fulfill certain conditions, okay? So not everyone accepts this premise, you know, and they throw it out there to being cults and whatever. But, you know, one of the conditions is that you have to make yourself loving. You have to be pure at heart, and you have to be poor in spirit. And, right, and those will, you know, and you will receive the kingdom of God, right? The poor in spirit, okay? Isn't that what the Christian Bible says? And that's what every religion says. So let's just go over similar. What is mysticism? And the word mystic has its origins in Greek mysteries. A mystic was one who had been initiated into those mysteries. So it was by, you know, back in those days, it was, not everyone had the ability to hear and feel from our Creator and to know these things. And it says, through which he had gained an esoteric knowledge of divine things and had been reborn into eternity. Okay, his object was to break through the world of history and time into that of eternity and timelessness. The method was through the ceremonies of sort was so vividly described by a certain writer. It says, through these mysteries, the initiated entered into something holy and a secret wisdom about which it was unlawful for him to speak. So the word mystery comes from the Greek verb M-U-O, however you say that, or shut or close the lips or the eyes. Okay? So in the course of time, the word mysticism came to an extended and indeed a different meaning. Okay, and in Greek and Oriental philosophy, which occurred in the centuries immediately preceding the birth of Christ, was known as Neoplatonism, N-E-O-P-L-A-T-O-N-I-S-M, which came to mean a particular sort of approach to the whole problem of reality, in which the intellectual, and more especially the intuitive, faculties came into play, right? You feel you get the spirit? Well, that's the intuitive faculty. That's not your mind saying it. It's your spirit. And as a result, the fusion of Christian and that Neoplatonist ideas in the early centuries of the Christian era, also a system of so-called mystical theology came into existence, which is one of the main foundations of Christian mysticism. To speak more generally, it is found in what is the raw material of all religions and is also the inspiration of much of philosophy, poetry, art, music, and a consciousness of beyond, okay? Consciousness of beyond, and we know today that that's very much so true, of something which through it is interwoven with. It is not the external world of material phenomenon of an unseen over the and above the seen. In the developed mystic, this consciousness is present in an intense and highly specialized form. Okay, let's see. What's more important? It says a mystical element enters into the commoner forms of religious experience when religious feeling surpasses this rational content. That is, when the hidden, the non-rational, unconscious elements predominate and determine the emotional life and intellectual attitude. In the true mystic, there is an extension of normal consciousness, a release of latent powers, and a widening of vision, so that aspects of truth by the rational and intellect are revealed to him, both in feeling and in thought. He apprehends an immense of the temporal and the eternal, and the eternal in the temporal. In the religious mystic, there is a direct experience of the presence of God, though he may not be able to describe in words, though he may not be able to logically demonstrate its validity. To the mystic, his experience is fully and absolutely valid and is surrounded and completely certain. Okay, he has been there. He has seen. He knows. And with St. Paul in the poem of F.W.H. Myers, he can say, those has felt the spirit of the highest cannot confound, nor doubt him, nor deny. Okay, so these are the most important parts. Out of their experience and their reflection has come to the following assertions, and these are pretty much what every religion is based on and what I love. So not only have mystics have been found in all ages, been in parts of the world, in all religious systems, but also, and that's when we say mystic, I think in terms of Christianity, I think we're talking about what the prophet has to say and all of that, has manifested itself in similar identical forms whenever the mystical consciousness has been present. Because of this, it has been sometimes called the perennial philosophy. Out of their experience and their reflection on it have come the following assertions. This phenomenal world of matter and individual consciousness is only a partial reality and is the manifestation of a divine ground in which all partial realities have their being. So, basically, we are made in the image and the likeness of God. The phenomenal world of matter, that's us, we're matter, you and me, we're made of matter. We got weight and we take up space. The phenomenal world of matter and individual consciousness. And consciousness is what we think, feel, and believe, and what we are aware of at any point in time, is only a partial reality and is the manifestation of a divine ground in which all partial realities have their being. We are made in the image and in the likeness of God. Number two, it is of the nature of man that not only he can have knowledge of this divine ground by interference, but also he can realize it by direct intuition, superior to reason, in which the knower is in some way united with the known. All right? Well, that once again, the united with the known, made in the image and likeness. And when we ask God and we pray every day that we ask for wisdom, well, I do that every day. I thank you, God, for wisdom. You give me knowledge of holy things and wisdom. You give me the wisdom to prosper. You know, that's all in the Bible, and that's number two. It is the nature of man that not only he can have knowledge of his divine ground by interference, and interference is what? Praying and asking. Ask, you have not because you ask not. All right? So the perennial philosophy are these things that we're making, made in his image. We're made just like him. We are spiritual beings here, made matter, made flesh in his likeness. So if we're made in his likeness, then we have the same abilities that he has, if we only believe it. All right? And that's your individual consciousness. That's what you sit down every day and you believe when you pray. You pray for your family. How many days when my babies were little, I prayed that, you know, I know I'm a single mom, but we're not going to be the single parent household that lives in poverty. I don't care what nobody says. I don't care what I see on TV. I spoke it, I asked it, and I got it. So, and, you know, all right, so number three in the perennial philosophy tells us that, and this is a long one, and there are actually four, that the nature of man is not a single, but a dual one. He has not one, but two selves. The phenomenal ego, of which he is chiefly conscious, and which he tends to regard as his true self. So that's what we're conscious of. And a non-phenomenal, eternal self, an inner man, the spirit, the spark of divinity within him, which is his true self. Which is his true self. That just gives me goosebumps just saying it. It's not your ego. Your ego is what you're conscious of. Oh, my hair looks good today. Whatever. It's what you see. But that's not your real self, of which he is chiefly conscious and which he tends to regard as his true self. And a non-phenomenal, eternal self, an inner man, the spirit, the spark of divinity within you, which is your true self. It is possible for a man, if he so desires, and is prepared to make the necessary effort to identify himself with his true self, and so with divine ground, which is the same or like nature. So what this is telling you, say it is possible for a man, if he so desires. And I think first thing we talked about in perennial philosophy is that you have to have a loving heart. You have to be poor in spirit. You have to have a loving heart. You have to be true. You have to have a true heart. And you have to be filled with love. So I think that's what you need in number three. Okay? A non-phenomenal eternal self, an inner man, the spirit, the spark of divinity within you, which is his true self. It is possible for a man, if he so desires, and is prepared to make the necessary effort to have love, to be true, to be poor in spirit, he will be able to identify himself with his true self, and so with divine ground, which is the same or like nature. That says we're just like God. If we choose to sit down and figure out what our true self is, we'll find our true self. In point four of the perennial philosophy, it is the chief end of man's earthly existence to discover and to identify himself with his true self. I'll read that again. It is the chief end of man's earthly existence to discover and to identify himself with his true self. It did not say a nigga needs a 300 and he will be the shit. No. It said it's your chief duty. That's why you're brought to this earth, is to discover and identify yourself and to identify your true self. And it says by doing so, you will come to an intuitive knowledge of the divine ground. And so apprehend truth as it really is and not as our limited human perceptions it appears to be. Not only that, we will enter in a state of being which has been given different names. Eternal life, salvation, and enlightenment. And I tend to like enlightenment. because I've been saved a long, long time, but I have never been as enlightened as I am today. That is the perennial philosophy. And it says further, the perennial philosophy rests on two fundamental convictions. And then that's all the time we're going to have. And I need you to go back and listen to this shit again. You're made in his image. You don't need the Eddie Longs of the world to give you closeness to God. You are God. All you have to do is look within yourself and pull it out of there. Use the Bible. Use the phrases. That's our example of the strength that God gives us. All right, so though it may be a great extent atrophied and exists only potentially in most men, but men possess an organ or faculty which is capable of discerning spiritual truth. And in its own spheres, this faculty is as much to be relied on as our other organs and their sensations. Okay, that's one of the fundamental convictions. And two, in order to be able to discern spiritual truth, men must in their essential nature be spiritual. In order to know that which they call God, they must be in some way partakers of the divine nature. Potentially, at least there must be some kinship between God and the human soul. A man is not a creature set over against God. He participates in the divine life. He is, in a real sense, united with God in his essential nature, for that is how he made us. This union is within us. It is in our naked nature. And where this nature is to be separated from God, it would fall into nothingness. This is our faith. This is what we believe. This is the love movement, baby. Listen to us over and over and over. I love it. I love you. Have a wonderful week. And know that, listen, tell your folks, be good, know we love you, and have a wonderful. I love it. I love it, and I love you. Bye-bye, guys.